When you imagine a brush with death, you might not think of euphoria. Near-death experiences can leave some survivors to grapple with depression, even post-traumatic stress. But for cartoonist Tim Kreider, a stabbing during a night out in Greece left him, well, happy for a whole year. 14 years ago, Kreider was knifed in the throat while walking someone home from a bar. The experience left him with a scar on his neck, with a new laugh, and with memories of a year when nothing could get him down. He wrote about that year recently on the New York Times Happy Days blog. And what about you? If you dodged a bullet, what did you get out of it? Tell us your experience. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Tim Kreider is author of the comic strip The Pain, When Will It End? And the author of two books, The Pain, When Will It End? And Why Do They Kill Me? He joins us today from our bureau in New York. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And you say, I think relatively sincerely, that you wish you could recommend near-death experience to everybody.
Well, I wouldn't wish death upon anyone, but yeah, if you could arrange nearly to be killed without the guarantee of living, it's very exhilarating.
You quote that Churchill line, there's nothing more exhilarating than being shot at and missed.
I can verify it is true.
And you woke up in Greece, presumably in the hospital, with a gash in your throat?
Right before I was, I remember before I was put under the anesthetic, I asked what exactly they were going to do. I'm not really sure why. It's not as if I was going to refuse treatment.
Right.
The surgeon said, well, we're going to take a look around and repair what we can. And I asked him, so may I expect to wake up? And he kind of shrugged and said, sure.
Boy, that gives you confidence.
Yeah. Well, I hoped I was in good hands. I was glad at least to be in the hands of the authorities, that it would not be my own fault if I died. And I did indeed wake up and was pleased to find myself still in the game.
Did you have that experience waking up saying, well, is this heaven?
I did not. I remembered what had happened, and I sort of experimentally twitched all my extremities to make sure that everything was still hooked up and working, and then I was like, excellent.
Excellent. And then
the kid is still in the game.
The kid is still in the game. And then you went on, well, you describe it as a year of euphoria.
Well, I wasn't euphoric constantly for 365 days. I would say that for that year, nothing much bothered me or got me down, which, believe me, for me, was something.
We've read your comic strip. We know. nevertheless, nothing could get you down because there was always that bedrock experience of, hey, I'm alive.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what most people who have had such experiences report. You know, it's not it's not some numinous experience. It's not an experience of the sacred. It's just remembering that you're alive.
And it's interesting. You say it lasted a year, but after that, does it come back from time to time?
Well, you know, it's there to remember. I think that it's very hard to be crazily grateful to be alive every day of your life. You know, I said in my essay, it's like trying to be passionately in love for the rest of your life. It doesn't work that way.
No.
You know, you have to get back to the business of living. And, you know, I've read studies that suggest that after both circumstantial highs and lows, we gravitate back to a certain emotional baseline. That's, you know, good news if you've undergone some sort of trauma, but it's not very cheering if your emotional baseline is relatively low.
I understand. But nevertheless, it's a little sad that you can't keep that feeling of that vitality, that understanding that, the time is short and you should enjoy every minute.
Well, I like to think I've hung on to some of it. I think there are people who can do that, but I think it requires, I think those people do that through meditation. Those people are spiritually advanced, and they do it through discipline, not through having some crazy misadventure. I mean, that sort of thing. That sort of afterglow can't last all that long.
This was on a New York Times website, and readers of your story have responded with some extraordinary stories of their own. I wonder if you've learned anything from them.
Well, I would say I learned that a lot of those experiences are the same. You know, the facts that people relate don't really convey the powerful subjective force of the experience. But it sounds like quite a lot of people had the same experience of a euphoria, and some of them managed to integrate that into the rest of their lives, and some of them just lost it and, you know, can remember it at moments. But it's hard to remember that experience in the same way that it's hard to remember, I don't know, physical pain or an odor from your childhood.
It's hard to put state of grace in that same category, but I guess it is.
Well, I used the word grace in that essay. That's a word from my Christian upbringing. I myself am not very spiritual, but, you know, as I said, what I was trying to convey was an experience of being vividly, consciously alive. You know, one thing I would say, a point that one reader made that struck me as insightful and true is that we as a nation, especially those of us who lived in New York or Washington, sort of underwent that same experience after 9/11. I was up here about a week after the World Trade Center attacks, and I almost hesitate to say this because it was such a ghastly and awful time, but there's ways in which it was also a very beautiful time. New Yorkers had sort of collectively had their emotional carapace torn off. You know, you'd make eye contact with someone and you'd both get choked up. Mm-hmm. You spoke to strangers. I saw a graffito here that said, "You are alive."
Let's get some listeners in on this conversation. Our guest is Tim Kreider, the cartoonist of The Pain, When Will It End? He's talking about a near-death experience and how it changed, and didn't, his life. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Chris is calling from Cape Cod.
Howdy, folks. How you all doing?
Good, thanks.
You know, it's funny. I'm sitting here driving home and hearing my own story being told to me. I was in a dreadful motorcycle accident, actually June 19th of 95. My anniversary is coming up, and I can certainly agree with the elation, the living every day to the fullest kind of attitudes. But the two things that I drew from it that I found very interesting, number one, I was able to watch myself heal almost in a third person standpoint, and I found it tremendously fascinating watching yourself, your body do what it needs to do to heal itself. But the other thing that was very fascinating is when I woke up on the ground and I realized that it wasn't a dream, the first thing that I thought of was ABCs, airway, breathing, circulation. It was Red Cross training that I'd gotten many, many, many years earlier. And to this day, I feel so secure and so good with the knowledge that in these emergency-type situations, knowing precisely how I'm going to react and precisely the attitude I'm going to have, and that just makes me feel really good when there's a car accident and I'm the first guy running up to the car, that I'm going to be the guy with his head on straight. And that's a good place to be.
So you gained some self-knowledge. I think a question all of us have, how would we react in a crisis? And you now know.
Precisely. And now, you know, I'm a little older. I have children. And you know, it's just very, very secure to know that when the kid is bleeding and running up to you or whatever, that you're not going to freak out. You're not going to panic, that you're going to airway, breathing, circulation, check, call, care, you know, and do it right.
Those lessons are important to remember. It's also important to remember every crisis is different. But Tim Kreider, I wonder, do you mark your anniversary?
Oh, yeah, I call it my stabiversary once a year. It's April 18th, actually.
So not that long ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago. And usually I go out and celebrate with friends on that day and remind myself that I'm lucky to be here and it's all gravy.
Tim, may I ask you a question, sir?
Sure.
Have you gotten in contact with any of the emergency personnel that were on scene the day of?
No. This happened on the island of Crete in Greece, and so it's a little difficult for me to contact them. I tried to send a record album to my surgeon, which he had been keenly searching for some years. And I just never heard back from him. I don't know if it ever got through. Dr. Harry Gonis, if you're listening, did you ever get the soundtrack from Nashville?
Oh, it's easy.
Yeah, I'll end on this. I was blessed with being able to speak to the actual EMTs that, not to be graphic, but kind of scraped me up. And it was it brought a tear to my eye to be able to thank them in person. So that's that. I wish you Godspeed, and I'll say farewell.
Chris, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Hunter from Flagstaff in Arizona.
Hello, gentlemen.
Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yeah, hey, I had emergency six-vessel bypass surgery at 44 years old, and that experience left me with a real perspective about what is important in your life. And, you know, for instance, at work, I work with a group of young engineers who are very fired up, and if everything, this project's very important, and I look at them and say, you know, let me tell you what's very important. It's your family, and it's your friends, and it's your life. And this project's going to come and go. There's going to be 100 more right behind it, but you get one ride on this merry-go-round.
And did you change your – obviously your perspective has changed, and that's good too. But I wonder, did either of you have the impulse to say, you know, I'm going to change my name to Albert Schweitzer and minister to the poor?
I think it was – for me, it was a little more subtle. When I'm thinking about making a decision, we do it. I mean, my wife and I now, you know, we've been talking about this. Let's do it. You know, you realize how finite everything is. And it really, you talk about the initial depression. I did suffer from that. And then I kind of snapped out of that and thought, man, you know, you're here and you have been blessed with the opportunity to go forward and live your life. I'm 50 now, and I figure, you know, we got 30 more years of this, and, you know, 25 if you're lucky, 10 if you're lucky. And so we hustle up a little more than we once did.
Do you find yourself being more decisive, Tim Kreider?
More decisive?
Yeah, let's do it.
Certainly not.
No. Okay. Hunter, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We're talking with cartoonist Tim Kreider. His comic strip is The Pain When It End. He's written an essay called Reprieve that was published in the New York Times Happy Days blog and got a lot of response to it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's try Peter. Peter with us from Berkeley.
Hi, thanks. Great topic. I remember the exhilaration I felt after recovering from a broken, actually shattered collarbone. What happened, I was on a deck behind a vacation house with no environmental light, and I fell off this eight-foot deck head first. And so it was terribly painful. I didn't have any time to be exhilarated about my survival, but it was in reflecting afterwards that I realized how close I came to being much, much worse. And then after lying around on the floor at home, you know, for collarbone, they don't give you a cast or much of anything. They just say rest as best you can. Luckily, I did have meditation, which helped me enormously. But, boy, when I got out and took my first few walks out around the block from my little studio apartment, that was when it hit me, just how wonderful this life is. And I looked around, and everybody was acting normal, and I said, don't you see how great it is to be alive? I was just thinking that every step was so great, every leaf, every ray of sunshine. And unfortunately, that did wear off after a while. But I would describe that as not taking life for granted. And then if you could just get yourself in that frame of mind once in a while, just remind yourself. So it's, and another form of survival that I might bring up because it would be so topical for so many people right now is economic survival. I did survive quite a bit of setback where I got cheated 3 years in a row in different ways, and it just compounded one after the other. But, you know, all these years later, I survived. I never went bankrupt, and my credit is cleaning up, you know, and I big corporations go bankrupt. I did not, and it's really great.
Peter, thanks very much for the story. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And here's an email from Joel in San Antonio. About 2 years ago in Mexico City, I was driving through a pretty affluent neighborhood in the early afternoon. At a stop sign, a man banged on my window and demanded I let him in. I got out of the car with my arms raised, thinking this was a simple carjacking. Another man came out of nowhere, shoved me in the back seat. The next 4 hours were nightmarish. I was coerced to go to ATMs throughout the city and empty out whatever accounts I could. When I was only able to withdraw the equivalent of $400, one of the men cocked his revolver and pointed it at me, demanding more. There would be certain death if I couldn't come up with more. I just stood there, looked down in the concrete, and braced myself for the bullet. What happened next, I still have to come up with an explanation for. He threw my keys at my face, and both men ran off. I've tried not to let it affect my everyday life, but it's a hard realization to have that you can die anytime, anywhere. It definitely has made me appreciate the time I do have left on Earth. And Tim Kreider, I wanted to ask you about something you wrote. It is one of the maddening perversities of human psychology that we only notice we're alive when we're reminded we're going to die, sort of the same way some of us only appreciate our girlfriends after their exes. And you've had time to contemplate that.
Yeah, you know, hearing some of these stories, I feel that my own pretty stupid misadventures, incommensurate to the kinds of real traumas and losses people have undergone. I mean, I didn't have to go through any kind of painful or lengthy rehabilitation. I didn't lose anybody I loved. You know, this will sound ridiculous, but in ways it's the best thing that could possibly have happened to me. You know, sort of a typical depressed 20-something. And, it, you know, afterwards I was kind of like Ebenezer Scrooge after Ghost Number 3.
I wonder, you said this was not a religious experience for you. For some people it is. I wonder how do you respond to them when they contact you?
You know, oddly, I didn't hear from anybody who, you know, reproached me for not having been more thankful to God. But I'm not the sort of person who would have imagined that God spared my life for some special purpose. But even if I were prone to that kind of thinking, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing happened the day that I was in a recuperative coma. So I'd like to think that that kind of ghastly coincidence would have quashed any such notion when I woke up. I can't really imagine a plan that would have called for that but required me to survive. It was luck or physics, whatever you want to call it. But I am very conscious of being lucky. A lot of people told me so after I woke up.
Thanks very much for being with us. We're lucky today.
Thank you, sir.
Cartoonist Tim Kreider's comic strip is titled The Pain, When Will It End? He's currently working on a third book of political cartoons, and he joined us today from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow, news, gossip, scandal. We'll talk about how stories live and die so quickly on the web and in viral culture. Join us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.